Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopijana Valaba Girivaradari. Gopijana Valaba Girivaradari. Yashoda Nandana Bhajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhajana Ranjana. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. A Gopi Jana Valaba Girivaradari. Gopi Jana Valaba Girivaradari. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Hey, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Valaba Girivaradari. Jaya Gopi Jana Valaba Girivaradari. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Bhaja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Yamuna Teravana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Paramahamsa Parivakacharya Asto Tarasati's Divine Grace Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananti Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sukahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasadi Gora Bhaktivrinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki Vrindavan Dham Ki Navadweep Mayapur Dham Ki Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Ganga Mai Ki Yamuna Devi Ki Shrimati Tulsi Maharani Ki Sri Bhakti Devi Ki Harinam Sankirtan Ki Samaveda Bhaktivrinda Ki Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutta Deshmi Satsriptaska Swamita Namini Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pistaya Bhutta Deshmi Bhakti Vyanta Swamita Namini Namaste Sarvati Devi Gaurvani Pichani Visheshu Shunyavadi Paschacha Vishitala. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 4, the characteristics of Rishabhdev. And the board is the text 18, which reads as follows. Bhagavatara sabena parikakshyamanan etish itasmin varshena kaschana purusho vanchatya vidyamanayam ivataro ivatmano nyasmat tatan chana kimpani karichid avikshate bartar yanu savanam vijrimbitashne hattisayam andharena. Have you asked to read it? Word for word. Bhagavata. By the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rishabena. King Rishab. Pari Rakshyamane. Being protected. Etasmin. On this. Varshe. Any meanings of Varshe? Yeah, so it means planet. Yeah.
Na,
not.
Kaschana,
anyone.
Purusha,
even a common man.
Vanchati,
desires.
Avidyamanam,
not existing in reality.
Eva,
as if.
Atmana,
for himself.
Anyasmat,
from anyone else.
Katanchana,
by any means.
Kimapi,
anything.
Karichit,
at any time.
Avekshate,
does care to see.
Bartari,
toward the master.
Anusavanam,
always.
Vijrimbita,
expanding.
Sneha Atisayam,
very great affection.
Antarina,
within one's self. Translation. No one likes to possess anything that is like a will-o'-the-wisp or a flower in the sky. For everyone knows very well that such things do not exist. When Lord Rishabdev ruled this planet of Bharatvarsa, even common men did not want to ask for anything at any time or by any means. No one ever asks for a will-o'-the-wisp. In other words, everyone was completely satisfied, and therefore there was no chance of anyone's asking for anything. The people were absorbed in great affection for the king. Since this affection was always expanding, they were not inclined to ask for anything. Anybody here not know what will-o'-the-wisp is?
Yeah, will-o'-the-wisp, okay. Anybody else know? Will-o'-the-wisp? Some lights, yeah. I looked it up, actually. It's every country has a will-o'-the-wisp. In Wikipedia, it gave all the different translations of all the different languages for this expression, will-o'-the-wisp. I almost thought I could come and say, ask everybody what their country of origin is and give the translation of the will-o'-the-wisp. In Dutch, it's... What it literally means is it's a phantasmagoria light. It's an illusory light that exists in a distance that somebody runs after. That's in a British translation, and it's will-o'-the-wisp. And it's the will, they give different reasons why the will developed. Why in English it's... Because in each country, the meanings like ghost light or fairy light or imaginary light or dangerous light. In English, why will? They're not quite sure. Somebody called will. So, and it's there in Bengali and it's there in Sanskrit in Prabhupada. It kind of mentions the version in Bengali and Sanskrit here, so the purport. In Bengali, the word gobdha dimba is used, which means the egg of a horse. Since a horse never lays an egg, the word gobdha dimba actually has no meaning. In Sanskrit, that was in Bengali, but in Sanskrit there's a word ka pushpa, which means... Yeah. No flower grows in the sky. Therefore, no one is interested in asking for ka pushpa or gobdha dimba. During the reign of Maharaj Rishabdev, people were so well equipped that they did not want to ask for anything. They were immensely supplied with all necessities of life due to King Rishabdev's good government. Consequently, everyone felt full satisfaction and did not want anything. This is the perfection of government. If the citizens are unhappy due to bad government, the heads of government are condemned. During these democratic days, monarchy is disliked by the people. But here is an example of how an emperor of the whole world kept all the citizens fully satisfied by supplying the necessities of life and following the Vedic principles. Thus everyone was happy during the reign of Maharaj Rishabdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Om Ignati Marandasya Ginajana Shalakaya Chakshurun Mitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam.
So I have some allergies, so you have to, if I'm, my nose is snuffling, and if I'm rubbing my eyes, it's not to do with tears, by the way. I thought it looked like getting all emotional, but it's just annoyed, dry, irritated eyes. Will-o'-the-wisp. Yeah, Prabhupada likes this expression, will-o'-the-wisp. He actually uses it quite a lot, the will-o'-the-wisp. And to just explain a bit more, everywhere it's related to marshland. You have bogs or swamps or marshes. And the scientific reason is that a release of one or two or three gases, phosphorus, because phosphorus lights up, and a mix with, I'm not sure, sulfur or something else, they form a sort of natural light. And if you're in a swamp, the idea is that swamps are not nice places. They're cold and damp. So you see a light. Oh, I'll go to the light, and then I'll get some warmth. But it's part of the phenomena is, like the rainbows, oh, there's the rainbow, it's really close. If I just walk there, I'll see the rainbow. But you never get to see the rainbow. So the same with the will-o'-the-wisps. You see the light, you see it there in the distance, and if you walk towards it, the more you walk towards it, the more distant it all seems. Distant. You can never get the will-o'-the-wisp. So it's a comparison that Prabhupada likes to make in relation to the material world. Our will-o'-the-wisp mentality. I'm this close to getting what I want. But yet, this, almost like you showed us the story of binding Krishna, like she ends up getting all the rope in Vrindavan, which we can imagine was quite a lot of rope. So she was endeavoring huge to tie it, and still, that gap was there. The gap never. So, as long as we pursue the idea of happiness in the material world, we may feel we get very close, but it will always remain at some distance, like the willow, the wisp. And also part of the mythology around it is you go further into the swamp. You go further in and further in, and the wisp is leading you deeper, deeper. And eventually you may become lost and die in the swamp. The text being about governments, I'm always a little wary or not very excited about texts about governments. Start talking about having a correct government. It's almost as wild a topic as Varnashram Dharma. You start talking about that as if it's like it's a will-o'-the-wisp. It's just around the corner. We're just about to get Varnashram. We're on the verge of the latest seminar, which will answer all our questions and it will all fall into place. Personally, I think it's a bit of a will-o'-the-wisp for our society in its present stage. And so is So is a government that's ready to take over the world, right? I think I'm not sure if anybody here is convinced about their plan to see ISKCON take over the government. We used to hear that during the 70s, the early days of ISKCON, they had this. It was 18 days. They used to quote it a lot anyway. The 18 days theory the Prabhupada gave. We could take over the world in 18 days. So 40-something years later, we've realized not only are we not going to do it in 18 days, but we've stepped down a little bit in our ambitions to first figure out ourselves and figure out our own society and learn how to run a kitchen or run a guest house or look after a few cows or... something a little more modest and a bit more simple, and try to figure that out and do it all together, and then see will people be impressed by our wonderful example, and then come and says, "Oh, guys, what you're doing is very nice. Can you help us?" Probably more likely the way it will work than us going out there and telling them this is how to do it. My sister was telling me she used to know the devotees very early on in Ireland, early 80s. And she liked Krishna consciousness, she liked the chanting, liked Prasadam, but what she didn't like was this young little person who said, she described him, pimply person, who was just out of their nappies trying to tell her how to run her life. It was just the biggest turn off, and she just like, everything else was great, but this somebody half her age trying to tell her how to run her life, it just didn't like it. So on a more social level, we should think about that too. We shouldn't. So many problems out there, and we have difficulty organizing cars to get out and chant Hare Krishna and the Hare Nam. So it may seem a little ambitious. But, so what do, how do we address this topic? And there's so much government talked about. It's amazing, actually. I'm not sure, like, anybody done a compilation, but especially the first canto, the one Prabhupada wrote in India before he came, the percentage of texts and purports, no, texts there, purports that are about kings and governments and how administrators would run things, it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. Prabhupada really did have that vision in mind, and it's there. And right now, it's, you could say, even though we've all read it, it doesn't really stand out to us because it's just, you could say, on one hand, you have the 10 canto and Krishna's pastimes. We know that's like, woo. Way out there for us. Also, is the government section too. It's also very esoteric topics of how when the administrators are devotees. But it's there. Prabhupada, it's in there. And sometime the instructions how the followers of Srila Prabhupada would run the government are in the Bhagavatam. Because the whole book is about ruling and governing and leaders. It's all about doing it. So how can we now address it in a more sober, maybe? Sober, make our little step in the right direction. Because that's really important too, because there's this psychological understanding that if you're at a certain point, I think this is in basically modern psychology and leadership courses now, they teach this. If you try to talk about or establish a point way out here, especially at meetings and things like that, and it's not realistic, then it's just too disconnected from where we're at right now as an individual or as a group level. So it's impractical. So it's always the next step. What's the next step we have to take? Let's be practical, and therefore that way things. Everybody stays encouraged and things stay constructive. So what for us is the next step towards this? We hear like the citizens are all happy with King Rishabh's good government. And I think two points really come to mind. One is addressing the first point, the Gobha Dimba, the horse egg and the flower in the sky, is that we should really, as much as possible, give up our illusions. Give up the false ideas we have of what might exist here in the material world. And that's basically we have to gradually understand the principle of human life, of existence, that there is no happiness in the material world. And that's a tough thing. That's a big, tough step we each have to take. That's not easily embraced. And David Meacham-Swami he likes to address this point. He would address audiences. Who here is convinced there is no love in the material world? Or who here feels a little uncomfortable when they hear that? And some of them go, yeah, I don't know. No love? Come on. There's something. I've had glimpses. I've had moments. I've had little bits here and there, right? It's very challenging to embrace that concept. But yet, interesting enough, and I've had this Vaishnava argument with devotees about no happiness in the material world. There is no happiness. But yet here, throughout the Bhagavatam, we hear, look at the citizens. The citizens were happy. Where is it mentioned? Everyone was happy during the reign of Maharaja Rishabdev. So what's that? Is that go against Dukhalai Mashasham? Does that go against it? And earlier on, during descriptions of the ruling of the Pandavas, again, the citizens were happy. So how do we address that? And well, we can say, well, the leaders were Krishna conscious, therefore everything was Krishna conscious. Well, maybe. And that's one thing about these government things. It's really hard to grasp, actually, how different it was. And that's why I find topics of government and Varanashram very quickly get disconnected from the reality, because things are so different. The cultural environment was so different. And it's so hard for us to appreciate that. In Kali Yuga, everything is a big, huge mess. I mean, we are just living in it's called the Iron Age, but I think we could change it to the Messy Age. It's just mess. And the basic platform of that mess is we don't even know how to interact with each other. We know how man to woman, how a Brahmin to a Kshatriya, how a Grihastha to a Brahmachari, Brahmachari to Grihastha. The whole basic principles of interaction are all like, they're real challenges. So it's just what to do in any given situation. The philosophy is there, but the philosophy doesn't give us the culture of interaction. How we then apply it in any given circumstance, how I might deal as a Brahmachari with somebody in this situation, somebody in this situation. Like in one situation, it had to be very formal. A Brahmachari is meant to be like distant and formal in certain situations. And then another given situation, somebody's in distress. No, you have to help somebody. So you see somebody suffering, you do something to help. So the whole cultural dynamics of applying it is very challenging for us. So in Kali Yuga, and one example I heard is how to speak. We've forgotten how to talk in Kali Yuga. And even though there's so much talking going on, there's like 24-hour radio stations that just talk all day long, chat shows. Internet's all about chatting, talking. But by civilized standards, we've forgotten how to talk. Because the whole paradigm or the base of the mantra everybody has now is, well, this is how I feel. I'm just letting you know how I feel. I'm just being honest with you. If I think you're a mean, ugly, hideous, nasty, envious person, I'm going to tell it to you. And I'm just being honest. It's kind of like the last leg of Dharma, right? Is the three: mercy, austerity, and cleanliness are gone. Honesty. But even honesty, it's praised, but it's praised in a very Kali Yuga style way. I'm going to speak my mind and say it as it is. And I don't care how you feel about it. I don't care what effect it's going to have on you. That's not my business. That's your problem. And it's very much, of course, I hope nobody not offend, but it's the American way. It's kind of the American standard, like, speak your mind, say it as it is, and don't think about the consequence. But no, a civilized person always thinks about how this will affect somebody else, how my action, how my words, and how even my thoughts. Actually, it comes down to that for a devotee. Actually, our thoughts. Somebody asked me recently, was it Arya? Yeah, somebody asked me about. Oh no! So, oh yeah, something hurts about this point of what he says, in Kali Yuga, we don't get reaction for offences in the mind. We get reaction for offences of words. If you say something nasty, or you do something physical, you get reaction. But in Kali Yuga, there's some discompensation. We don't get reaction for offences in the mind. But that has to be put in context of what the Yugas are about. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai. When that's quoted, and it's obviously, I haven't read it directly, the source, but some Purana that mentions the compensation, it's in comparing to what they would get then. Back then, in previous ages, the thought got a very immediate and heavy reaction if you had a bad thought. But nowadays, it's not that we don't get reactions. Of course you get a reaction to a thought. If you have a certain thought towards somebody, what's the first reaction that happens? Not necessarily. Eventually, yes. Even before emotions. If you have one thought, what does it do? Yeah, it creates another thought. It creates another thought of the same nature. The thoughts connect, however the whole subtle realm works. If you have a thought and you give attention to it, our whole subtle being draws more towards it. I always like to, by Sheshikur's mantra, where your attention goes, your energy flows. Is that it? Where your attention goes, your energy flows. Your energy flows, your attention goes. Basically, whatever you give attention to, that's where your energy goes. So one thought, and builds another thought, and that's why, and then it becomes the emotion, and then becomes the action. And it's a very, very clear, very scientific process. And that's why the main method of purifying ourselves is ignoring certain thoughts, making that choice. I ignore a thought. Because I give energy to it, and that's why we know the classic, as a Brahmachari, I can say, talk about the Brahmachari thing, I won't think of women, I won't think of sex, I won't. Woo, it's like churning it up. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's the same thing, it's energy, and it's really strong energy too. It's the same thing as I want it, I don't want it. It's the same thing, it's energy. And energy to something makes it grow. So if we actually, and that's why at some point, if we are feeling something emotionally and we're doing something activity-wise, we can say, it's not my fault, it's not my responsibility. It is, 100%. Because the thought came, and whatever state of consciousness I was in at that time, I thought, and then what about this? Oh, what about this? And the thoughts built. So, and that's, so in relation to the illusions, and how one of our first steps towards good government is we have to take responsibility. Because that's what the government does, right? The government takes responsibility for the citizens. So if we're to create some stage of good government, we have to first counteract the Kali Yuga effect of saying them, him, her, it. It's somebody else. It's always a Kali Yuga tendency is always to do this, to push away from oneself the responsibility that it's my problem. It's my problem. Kali Yuga, is 5,000 years old? And we hear about, this is, because Rishabhdev's a long time ago, but let's go back to the Pandavas, 5,000 years ago. We had the same situation with Maharaj Parikshit. He was a good king, and all the citizens were happy. The king was in Hastinapur. He ruled the whole world. In 5,000 years, it's gone from India and ruling the world with pious kings and the whole world being run very nicely to what it is now. What's happened? The guy in after 28, 30 years, the longest ruling dictator, Mr. Colonel Gaddafi, has been toppled. And the citizens of Libya are celebrating their freedom. They're out cheering their expression they like to use is taste of freedom. And that's unfortunate because from our sides, as the Prabhupada says here, monarchy is disliked by the people. Well, if there are people like Mr. Colonel Gaddafi, then that's only to be expected. People who are whose only motivation is their own selfish need. They're not actually caring of the citizens, and we will hear of all sorts of, horrible things that these leaders do to their citizens. But it will just reconfirm to people that monarchy is not to be trusted, because look what they become like. So that's the continuing degradation of Kali Yuga, that the monarchs have gone from Maharaj Parikshit to Colonel Gaddafi. But why has it gone like that? And each of us who are presently here in Kali Yuga, we should put our hand up and say, yes, I take a portion of the guilt. I should take a portion of the guilt, because it's not that Colonel Gaddafi created that mentality that he's in. He's born into it. Kali Yuga, the ethos is going forward. Anytime anybody does a sinful activity, so it affects. Oh, that's another thing about thoughts I wanted to say, but there's two effects of thoughts. One, you have a thought, you have a second thought. But thoughts affect the atmosphere. Actually, thoughts, an atmosphere becomes affected by thoughts. And that's, even in Kali Yuga, that goes on. And that's why people, we enter certain environments, we can detect things. Of course, in Kali Yuga, we're not so sensitive to it, but it affects us. So our thoughts affect the atmosphere. And we have to take responsibility for that. So when somebody performs a sinful activity, it creates an atmosphere that, hey, this is good, this is okay to do. So what to speak of in this life, we have to be a little bit humble and think, yes, in previous lives, because we're here, it means we've done bad things. We've contributed to this, the present state of the times, the Kali Yuga age. We've all contributed. We're all guilty. And so we should, as devotees, this is where a devotee is, could we say, is different from a non-devotee, when we take a really down-to-earth definition. We're taking responsibility for the mess. When, like now, the Libyans are happy that he's gone, and the Egyptians are happy their guy is gone, and now it's going to be wonderful now, we're going to replace it. But no, because none of them are working on the fundamental principle that's caused the problem in the first place, that the Gaddafis and the, whatever his name was, gets in charge. And the fundamental principle is we have to stop chasing the will-o'-the-wisps. We have to stop this mentality of happiness in the material world. And I just heard Prabhupada use a nice example I hadn't used before of a compass. Everybody knows what a compass, right? There's the sharp point and your pencil. So a compass, you put the point down, and you draw a nice round circle with your compass. But if people put the center of the compass in two different places, then when they draw their circles, they overlap. And somebody else draws it, it overlaps again. So you get conflicting circles. But if everybody's point is the same, if everybody puts their compass in the same spot, then there's nice, clean circles. Prabhupada was saying that everybody makes the goal of their life pleasing Krishna. If everyone has the same goal, then everything goes on very nice. And problems and conflicts and issues come because we're not. We're not putting Krishna in the center just yet. Non-devotees are certainly put. It's all about me. It's all about what I can achieve. What's in it for me? Again, and I consider it nowadays perfectly reasonable to say that. Well, what's in it for me? There's got to be something in it for me. But a devotee thinks, so no, how will I please Krishna by this act? What element of this act is going to please Krishna? And that consciousness is very important, because I was also thinking how there's certain things we do as devotees that are explicitly Krishna conscious, and some things are not explicitly, or we say implicit, like coming in front of Radha Gopinath. That's an explicit Krishna conscious thing, and coming to see Krishna. You could say looking after a child or brushing your teeth in the morning is not an explicitly Krishna conscious thing. Josh. I make it Krishna conscious by the way I do it, I do it in a certain attitude, I do it in a certain conscience, and my goal is to, if I clean myself, I clean myself because it's the standard that I have to do to see Krishna. Or if I raise my child, I'm going to do my absolute best to give this child Krishna consciousness. We have to direct it. But somebody could be in front of the deities and thinking, the person behind me is really driving me nuts. If they don't back off me in a second, I'm going to have to say something to that Prabhu. I could be like, there's that one again. And, oh yeah, I haven't told him yesterday. He really annoyed me about that statement. He just was too much, and I'm going to have to tell him. This can be going in our minds when we're standing right in front of the deities. So we may be there in front of Krishna, but our conscience is not Krishna conscious. It's in a mundane state. But we were doing something that's so-called mundane, but our conscience can be very nice. Very nice. And Krishna's accepting it. So because to the degree that we are putting Krishna in the center, and it's a gradual act of faith that we have to increase in. I always seem to give this little example about Krishna, that's why we're here. Krishna is in our sphere. He's in our space. But how much is he in the center of our space? What distance is he from the center of our lives? And to the degree that he's at some distance, we will still have problems. We will have issues and difficulties. We have to gradually acknowledge and face up and bit by bit put Krishna more in the center. And therefore we will, and of course then what is that? What will that create? Well, that will create the reality of this very oft-quoted point about Srila Prabhupada about the mystery of cooperation, the difficulty of cooperation. It's something everybody, also the non-devotees, talk about it, but it's only possible when we actually address the key need of why we're doing something. If everybody's doing it for their own benefit, then things can go on. Things do go on in the material world very nicely. They achieve some wonderful results. But it's all about what I'm getting out of it. It's a very cold, mechanical way of doing things, very highly fruitive, of course. And it falls apart very easy. I heard that point explained recently nicely. There's that one text, Yashyashta Bhakti Bhavati Kinchana, Savayagunastatra Smasasura, Harav Bhaktasya Kutoma Hadguna. This rather challenging text explaining how, and Prabhupada quotes it a lot, that there's no good qualities in the material world. It's like, no good qualities? It's like, nah, come on, I see so many good qualities and so many nice people. But the quality is affected by two things always. And it is there, and you will see it, and we should acknowledge it when we see it. But we should also understand it's affected by two things. One, it's always conditional. There's always an element of condition. I'm nice to you, I'll be kind, because in time I want you to be nice to me. Or, like the example with children, share with Tom your sweets, because then Tom will share with you his sweets. Mutual, I guess the expression is, I rub your back, you rub my back. It's always going to be there on some level or other. But it's better than nothing, of course. As Kali Yuga progresses, we know it won't be there. But that's always there, what I'm getting out of it. Even in a nice relationship, even in a good relationship, I'm here to help someone. I want to be with somebody, and I want to be nice to someone because I want them to be nice to me. This is unavoidable. How they're going to please me in the relationship. And the idea of not having that is very, 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 very challenging. And that's why when we hear the residents of Vrindavan, we hear there's no comprehension of themselves at all. This idea of oneness does exist. But we say the real oneness is that where I'm an individual and Krishna's an individual, but I have no sense of myself at all. It's just about Krishna. It's all about him. And that's very gets quite daunting, the idea of that mentality or achieving that mentality. So the two qualities that affect people's good qualities, the two aspects that affect people's nature, kindness and things like that, is one, yeah, it's conditional, and two, it always comes to an end. At some point, the quality will stop. At some point, it's limited. Something will change. Something has to change. And that's the material world. That's just the way it's set up. But in spirituality, good qualities are meant to be free from any concern for oneself and unconditional. It'll just go on, unlimited. It will always go on, continue to go on. And this will come about from putting Krishna in the center. And at least meditating and working upon putting Krishna in the center. And therefore, so primarily we have to do this as individuals first. We have to start with ourselves in Kali Yuga. We have to, if we start, there's three types of reform we hear about. There's political reform, social reform, and personal reform. Political reform means we try to establish a law that affects everybody. A social reform, I try to pass something that affects people I know, people interacting around me. And personal reform is I'm just here first. And it's considered wise and recommended that if one is not engaging in personal reform while trying to engage in social and political reform, you're just going to be a big headache for everybody. It's just not possible. So the first thing we have to do is engage in personal reform, work on ourselves. If we want to talk about something or teach something, we know first we have to do it ourselves. Then we'll affect maybe the people in our environment. And if that develops, then we can affect people on the wider scale. But we have to start with ourselves. So if we want good government, if we want a perfect GBC, if we want a perfect temple management, then we have to, first of all, be doing whatever we can in our means to work upon ourselves, to put Krishna in the center. Because when everybody puts Krishna in the center, then there will be no conflicts. Conflicts come because clashes of what I want and what you want. Okay. And then just as one other thing, I guess it's mentioned here, probably mentioned it twice actually, is being satisfied. Consequently, everyone felt full satisfaction and did not want anything. All the citizens were fully satisfied. So being satisfied is very important. And this actually, for me, this is where we have, of the four regular principles, it's kind of like the gray principle. Why is it so important? The no gambling. Anybody quickly, why do we make such an emphasis of no gambling? What's wrong with gambling? It's cheating. Honesty. Agitates the conscience. Yeah. Somebody over there? Yeah, running around you? Yeah. Constant. They want more, yeah. So greed. So cheating, always agitating, and inherently it creates dissatisfaction. It creates dissatisfaction. And a very fundamental principle, Krishna says throughout the Bhagavad Gita, again and again, is a devotee is satisfied. So it's really, there's so many implications from it. So we could say, to be strong about it, that if we're not trying to be satisfied, or if we're not satisfied, then it's a type of subtle, in the realm of that principle. We should understand that everything on the material level, our needs are met, and we should just be satisfied with what we have. And then I want to speak on the Krishna conscious level. How much we still don't comprehend how Krishna is caring for us. And how challenging that can be at times, that Krishna is caring for us. Do we actually... How much in the depths of our hearts do we feel, and are we convinced that I have no worries. Krishna is looking after me. And of course, so we don't be silly about it. We don't be irrational based upon that. But still, we meditate upon it, and we see how far we have developed in it, and then we always try to improve that, be more convinced about it. And of course, when we make some attempt to meditate and to appreciate Krishna is taking care of us, then Krishna will reciprocate. We can be assured. So we have to try and be satisfied. As much as possible, because goods are satisfied. Anyway, okay, I'll stop there. Anybody had any? Let me make some comments or questions. Suriya. No. Culture, yeah. Is it the only thing?
Yeah.
Well, chanting Hare Krishna will be happy. It's like in the Vedas, you have, or specifically in the Vedanta Sutra, you have these aphorisms. And the nature of an aphorism, it needs unpacking. You have something, and you have to open. Like Atato Brahmavigyas and Anandamaya Abhyasat. They're very small little verses, but there's so much in them. Be unpacked. So same with chanting Hare Krishna, be happy. It's an aphorism that needs unpacking. Chanting Hare Krishna is not just the activity of having a hand in the bead bag and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Certainly, that's a major part of it, but that activity, when we actually do it, we mean as well, and because Prabhupada, there's quite a off-quoted purport in the second, it's the first canto, I forget which chapter, Prabhupada explains, if one wants to chant with attention, one has to be pure in body, pure in mind, and pure in words. And to basically be pure in all those things, you have to be pure in what you do. So to actually do it, and anybody who practices it for a period of time, gradually realizes that there's more and more, every aspect of my life, everything I do, like the 10 offenses, it's not, I don't tend to get annoyed at a devotee when I'm chanting my rounds. Don't tend to. But I get annoyed at a devotee when I'm doing some service, and then there's some clash. And if it doesn't go well, then when I go to chant, it will affect my chanting. So it's everything throughout the day affects when we put a hand in the bead bag and chant for 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And the more a devotee grows up and matures, he realizes that if I eat too much, then I'm going to sleep too much, then I just can't chant at the right time, then I can't give it the right focus, and the whole culture that has to develop around, I've got to try and chant nicely. The best time of the day, in the best consciousness, and everything I do affects it, especially like, again, go back to, if I have a bad interaction with somebody, I get really agitated, I go to chant, it's like, whoa. So chanting Hare Krishna, be happy, it's just a mantra that describes how everything in our day, and that is for us, I used to like a lot, Prabhupada's one time, there's one proper Prabhupada mentions how all our service activities, well, it comes under Dharma, Samastha, Apumsa, Vishwakshinakatasu, That everything we do, and the text is relation to like somebody who's outside Dharma, if everything you do isn't to please Vishnu, then shram is a waste of time. But then as devotees, we have to apply that too. That if everything I do isn't cultivating that when I pick up my beads to chant, when I open the Srimad Bhagavatam to hear, I'm going to have some taste. I'm going to have some interest. Everything has to lead towards that. All my services. And actually, I said that the other day to Malati Mataji. I just said, like, she was chanting rounds at the front of the castle. And I said, sometimes I have to remind myself, I came to the movement to chant Hare Krishna. There's just so many other things that go on, and they completely absorb my mind. But I remind, oh yeah, why did I come here? I came to chant Hare Krishna. Now, in the meanwhile, there's so many other things that I'm doing or being asked to do that end up taking over my consciousness. So I have to remind myself, I came to chant Hare Krishna. And these other things I do, they're going to support me chanting Hare Krishna. Because I'm going to do something and maybe please a devotee or do something nice or get myself in a good conscience. And when I chant, I'm going to chant nicely. So chanting Hare Krishna, be happy. We realize, and Krishna will reveal in our hearts the things we have to do to actually do that, to chant nicely. And therefore, and then we be happy. And then maybe I might make somebody else happy. If I'm, and then someday. Yeah, don't imagine. Yeah. Well, of course, fundamentally we know that chanting Hare Krishna is the Yuga Dharma and requires no qualification. Otherwise, not one of us would be here right now. No, it can take up with no qualification, but that's only for a very short period of time. Once we take it up, we have to then come to a certain level of purity. That's the practice purity, that's sadhana. That doesn't require any qualification. That's, again, I heard Prabhupada saying about initiation. Initiation we get is not Vedic at all. If it was Vedic initiation, every one of us here would still be Bhakta and Bhaktin. We would never reach the Vedic qualification for initiation. We have Pancharali Pradeep initiation, where we've accepted two things, the order of the Guru and the names of Lord Krishna, the names of Lord Vishnu. And that is initiation. So that means you don't have to any level of status, no previous samskara, no level of purity, just a little determination, I'm going to do this. And that's what sadhana is. The basic sadhana immediately puts us on a level of purity where we can get up and chant Hare Krishna. Because if we're not even doing that basic purity, then we won't get up and chant Hare Krishna. We'll want to sleep and eat. I think there's more dynamics to that myself, actually. That's certainly true. But I think there's different dynamics involved. Like, we hear that, just the first point about devotees saying at the beginning they have a certain taste. Well, that's certainly a reality. I know I experienced it. And that's the nature of Lord Chaitanya's distribution in this age of Prema Sankirtan. It's like the change from the atmosphere of Kali Yuga to Prema Sankirtan. it's magic. Like, it's just such a magical experience. And while there's different devotees give different interpretations of what happens next, one that Krishna withdraws, or we disqualify ourselves, Because when we come, we know we come with such an innocence and such a desire and such a like, oh, I want this, I want this, I want this. And then we come into the society of devotees, and then we get it, but then we realize our level wasn't very, very advanced. And then unless we push ourselves very quickly or we're trained very nicely, then at some point we do things that drags us down. So we go from the Namabha stage to the Namaparad stage. We join in the Namabha stage because that's just the mercy of the movement and our such sincerity to get out of the material world or just to get some relief. Lord Chaitanya's mercy will reciprocate and we will get the relief and we will chant like with such intensity. But then later we may lose that and then slip down to the lower stage. But also this I think for later on, because we hear in relation to like Krishna appearing to Narada Muni, that Krishna can like just be, like the gopis as well, that he appeared and says, well, then I disappeared just to increase your have I got him? Where is he? A little. If we think we have something, then we kind of lose a little bit of our drive. But as soon as we become aware, I don't have it. I'm going to get it. It reignites our sadhana, and sadhana is all about having that fire in it. Sadhana is not just the mechanics of it. If it's just mechanical, then sadhana doesn't. Sadhana has to have this. I want to get here. I want to get here. I want to get there. I want to get what that devotee is because I see him so nicely. I want to get where Krishna is. I want to get to a real spiritual space where I'm not like absorbed in when am I going to fill my belly again. It's just like, is that where I'm at? So both things will be there. We can do things which can bring us down, and then Krishna can be doing little things to us too. But so there's many dynamics that are involved in a devotee's going forward. And I like to think, even when a devotee says 99% pure, he's maybe just a little bit, but the passion that devotee has, that I want Krishna. I really want Krishna. Because they're convinced they don't have him. And yet they're so advanced. But the neophyte is thinking, oh yeah, okay. I've got the clothes down. Chilak looks okay. I know how to go about going jai hai bol, jai hai bol, jai hai bol. So I've got all the externals down, therefore I've got Krishna. But we know that doesn't last. We have to be constantly thinking, no, I don't have Krishna. There's what that famous song by Narottam Das Thakur, I am constantly running, the end of Guru Devas, I am running behind you shouting, Krishna, Krishna, you have Krishna, you please give him to me. So that's, you mean, running behind, we got to keep running in spiritual life, not sit back and go. I think that's it. The clock is played. So we have to always keep the fire alive. Yeah. Technically, I should stop, but nobody's chastising me here by. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Against the principles. Yeah. Yeah. Real mission, the real goal. Yeah. I would say Krishna is very generous. He's the most generous person. And he allows for us to reciprocate with him to the level we're at. So if it's at a certain level, if I'm just trying to get relief from, what is it, the miseries of, what's the first characteristic of devotional service is relief from miseries? What's it called? Kleshagni. Kleshagni is the first characteristic of pure devotional service. It is pure devotional service to get free from material miseries because that's what we're looking for, and Krishna will reciprocate with that and do that and be very pleased. Be very, very pleased with that. But later on, the dynamic changes. Krishna wants more. Krishna will change the elements of the equation. And that's why we hear a devotee at some point, if we interact in a certain way, then Krishna won't take offense. But if we have reached a certain level, especially in the devotee society, if we also engage in sense gratification as a bhakta, we might get away with it. But now Krishna goes, no, don't, you can't do that. Slap maybe more. So the dynamic always changes. So Krishna is very generous. He accepts what we're into, bhava-grihija-nardana. He accepts the essence of what we're trying to come forward. We're being sincere. And I guess it's summed up in that word sincere, right? At a certain point, all I can offer now is a Krishna, sincere prayer, like Gajendra. Please, I'm suffering. I need relief. I need relief. And Krishna is just happy that we're turning to him. He's very actually happy we're turning. But later on, we have to always be going forward. Okay, Krishna, I've seen you give, because we see it, we've all experienced some relief from misery. We're all like, what the relief, I'm not the body. Whoa, great. And everything else is so wonderful. But I have to move forward. I have to more and more, that's my analogy. Krishna's in the center, he's in our circle, say, but more and more we have to get him into the center. More and more in the center. That it's no longer it's me, it's all about Krishna. But Krishna's not too demanding. He allows us the time to gradually get that center. And we have to get there. That we have to get there for the final goal. And Goloka Vrindavan's about that, where it's all about Krishna. It's even hearing about sometimes it can be bewildering. The gopis dress themselves nicely and they're very eager to look nice. Saying, oh, why are they eager to look nice? Eager to look nice because they know Krishna will be pleased by looking at me looking nice. So the dynamic... The dynamic will change throughout spiritual life. Okay. Ultimately, yeah, in the reality of it, you can't become. Just... And the manager was pointing out, we can still be motivated by that. It's still the wrong motivation. I seriously think I'm over time here. But it is so important that we get clearly the clear motivation of why I'm doing something. I'm doing it for Krishna's pleasure, even though it's always been an illusion. But now, as a devotee, I want to realize. Even Prabhupada says, why do I like this body? We think we like this body because I feel good. No, we don't. We like the body because Krishna's in there. Ultimately, that's why we like it. But we don't know that. A non-devotee doesn't know that. And as practicing devotees, we don't know it. So we have to clarify our motivation more and more. Oh, why am I looking after this body? Why am I feeling it like prasadam? Because it's Krishna's and I want to please Krishna. And by keeping it nicely, then I can do something nice for Krishna. So it's always clarifying my motivation and acknowledging my bad motivation and getting my right motivation. Okay, stop. Grantarashima Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.